What happens when you combine high-tech mini-golf and food? Hello, this is Jonathan Mays, editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. And in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, I speak with Joe Vranken, the CEO of the fast-growing entertainment concept, Putt Shack. Putt Shack is an 18-unit chain that combines full-service restaurant with an indoor game of mini-golf, neither of which is all that standard. The mini-golf features innovative games featuring a high-tech ball, and the food is much better than you would expect at a concept like that. We talk with Joe about Putt Shack, the games, and the food. We chat about consumers' high expectations for food these days and why a company like Putt Shack cannot overlook its menu. We talk about real estate and an awful lot about mini-golf and where the chain is going from here. It is a fascinating conversation about food and mini-golf. So please have a listen. All right, I'm here with Joe Vranken. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jonathan. Happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about Putt Shack.
So Putt Shack is the world's only tech-infused miniature golf. We are a social entertainment concept that combines a fun activity with upscale casual dining, great signature cocktails. What's different about Putt Shack and the game that we play is the inventors of the game created a way to essentially put a mini iPad within the golf ball. And so what that allowed us to do was program the ball to score the game automatically. So you no longer carry a pencil and paper. Everything is done for you automatically. So our guests can be completely immersed in the game of Putt Shack and playing it. And the inventors basically stepped back and said, okay, well, miniature golf, everybody knows how to play it, but it hasn't changed in 100 years. How do we reinvent this game? So the first thing they did was created the technology around it. The second was to create holes that are really geared towards our core target demographic, which is 21 to 39-year-olds. So you'll have a beer pong hole. You'll have a roulette hole. You have a trivia pursuit hole where you'll get a true-false question that'll pop up. If you think the answer is true, you put it under a bridge that says true. If you think it's false, you put it under a bridge that says false. If you get the answer right, you get bonus points. If you get it wrong, you lose points. So unlike traditional miniature golf, you're trying to get the highest score possible as opposed to the lowest. So you'll get bonus points for a hole in one, and every hole has a way to score bonus points or hazards where you lose points. So each one of our venues typically has 4 9-hole courses. So there's 36 holes in every venue. And then we wrap that around with an upscale casual dining experience with globally inspired food menu, a lot of shareables, you know, very approachable from the standpoint that we have vegan opportunities, vegetarian, gluten-free options, right? So we're inclusive. And the fun thing about miniature golf is it spans multiple generations, right? I mean, you can play miniature golf if you're 7 years old, and you can play it if you're 77 years old. So, you know, during the day, we do a lot of families. We do a lot of corporate events. After 8 o'clock, we turn into a 21 and older venue. And then it really, the whole lighting, the sound, everything changes and it turns into more of an upscale nightclub feel.
Mm-hmm. So they kind of developed the ball. Yeah. That's what they developed the ball and then developed the concept around it. Is that how that worked?
Correct. So actually, Steve and Dave Jolliffe, they're identical twin brothers who actually invented the game itself. Two things. They're avid inventors and they're avid golfers. So they basically, you know, stepped back and really took a look at, hey, how can we do this? They originally thought they could achieve what they wanted to with camera technology. And then after years of trying, realized that that didn't work. So then they took a look and said, okay, well, how can we put all of the technology inside the golf ball? So they created, like I said, a mini iPad within that golf ball, patented that. It's called the trackball technology. So Putt Shack owns on a global basis the concept of automatic scoring in miniature golf. So what that means for us as a business and creating a barrier of entry and the fact that we're the only ones who have the technology and will continue is the concept of automatic scoring, meaning somebody else can put completely different technology inside that golf ball. And if it scores automatically, then it violates the intellectual property protection we have, which is automatic scoring within miniature golf.
Hmm. Wow. Wow. I know that they warn you can't run off of the ball.
Yeah, we prefer you don't. I mean, I think some people probably think, hey, I wonder what happens if I hit this with like a driver, and it'll not do very well.
To me, it's a fascinating, I mean, just the idea that you don't have to score your own mini golf is in and of itself, to me, it just like makes the whole game a lot more relaxing. You don't have to carry the little card and the pencil with you. Whatever. It's a remarkable revolution in such a simple game.
It's really interesting how, you know, you think it's, you know, it's just a little thing. I mean, how hard is it to keep score from, you know, a hole on miniature golf? But what's amazing is just what an impact it has on the guest experience. Mm-hmm. Because again, they can be totally focused on the people that they're there with, the people that they're creating that experience, the memories with. And I think what part of the brilliance, the other co-founder of Puttshack, Adam Breeden, is brilliant at really creating these designs, the lighting, the ambiance. You know, I mean, we invest a tremendous amount in the lighting as an example. Because throughout the day, we're trying to change the whole feel of what the venue is like. And then it's how do you activate all the senses for our guests? You know, with, you know, we have DJs every Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, you know, so from the sound to the lighting to the smells, and those smells go beyond the food into, you know, our signature cocktails, some of which will come out in a smoking treasure chest, et cetera. It's the whole experience is designed to really create a lot of fun, but also activate your senses and allow people to, you know, just be completely immersed, turn off all the squirrels that are running around in their head for a couple of hours and just have some fun.
Mm-hmm. So why create this around around sort of a food and games chain? Why do that rather than, you know, just a chain of, you know, miniature golf?
You know, there's a few things that I think have changed since the pandemic, and I think one of those is people are looking for experiences, right? And I think within our space, you know, within the social entertainment space, which right now seems to be a pretty hot space. And, you know, you've got everything from, you know, miniature golf to axe throwing to, you know, pickleball. Mm-hmm. And everybody seems to want to get into the space. And I've been doing this for 20 years now, in one capacity or another. And I think and for us at Puttshack, it really comes down to three things, what we call the triple threat. One is having a fun and engaging game that is differentiated, that people really like and want to come back and play again and again, right? So we've got four courses. We introduced a new game when we opened our Dallas location, which I'll tell you about here in a minute. But there's also that intellectual property protection. So somebody can't open another one, you know, right across the street from you. But that by itself today, I don't think is enough for long-term success within a concept. The other is having an equally strong food and beverage offering. So for us, and Mark Boynton, who is, you know, our head of food and beverage, he's a French-trained executive chef. It was, how do we create a casual dining experience with globally inspired food flavors that can compete with any casual dining option that our guests have to choose from? And then the third part is our associates really tying everything together to create those memories. And I think you really have to balance a really strong food and beverage offering and a really compelling game for long-term success. And I think that combining the activity with the food and beverage it just creates a better kind of formula for people to have a great night out.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. Like, you're going to go and get something to eat before or after you play mini golf. Why not just do it all at the same time and then upgrade it?
It's kind of like Vegas. Once we get them inside, we don't want them to leave.
Yeah. I hope you have some clocks around there though. So
we do. Yeah,
I guess the other, but you know, you mentioned the food element of that. And I think that one of the hallmarks of the current crop of of entertainment brands, food and games concepts is that they're not, food isn't a secondary option. You know, like, and if you go to some of the earlier brands, and, you know, and I remember one, you know, I remember some executive distinctly saying, you know, noting that we don't make money from food, we make money from the games. And then so the food became a secondary option, you know, and then later they've had to sort of up their game because the fact of the matter is consumers today have higher expectations. They're just not going to tolerate garbage in their food. They're just not. They absolutely want to, you know, they'll go somewhere else. Especially, you know, with, especially these days with all of these competitors coming up.
Yeah, they absolutely will. You know, to me, one of the things that I really like hearing the most, you know, when somebody comes and plays Puttcheck for the first time, you know, they talk about, oh my God, the game was great. Which I kind of expect because it's something they've never played before in this way and can't get anywhere else. But I really know that we're doing things well when they go, and you know what? I would go back just to eat. The food and beverage was that good. And that's, I think, you know, a huge focus of what we do. You know, again, I could talk about the upscale game that we've created, et cetera. And, you know, the reality is because of what people have as their childhood memories, they walk in expecting to see kind of a lower end build out. They're blown away by the build out that we've created, and they expect to see pirate ships and windmills and not the type of holes that have been created for Puttcheck. So that part already exceeds their expectation. They don't expect to look at a menu and see wood-fired octopus on the menu, but you're going to find it, right? And you're going to find Parisian chicken skewers and some really good globally inspired stuff, but you're also going to have classic, you know, handhelds. You're going to have your, you know, OG burger. But it's got its own, you know, twist to it because it's not just a ground beef burger. It's a combination of brisket and chuck and short rib. And so there's always something that, you know, we do. I mean, we have 100 house-made recipes that go into the variety of offerings that we have that make up our menu. And to your point, John, I think people today, they can see through if like you put this game together and then you just threw food, right? Or the flip side is also true, right? There are other concepts that really focus on the food and beverage, and then they throw some activities to try to separate themselves out from, you know, a casual dining restaurant. And guests can see through both of those. They really want the best of an activity as well as the food and beverage. And I think one of the things that we're very blessed about is because we're underlying our game is based in technology, we can continue to evolve and advance the game itself through software development and software changes, as opposed to having to physically change out all the holes, right? So for corporate events, we're introducing a game where you play teams against each other, right? We can go into the software and create a, you know, an uber competitive version of it where you can steal points from each other so that if you're, you know, going with a group of competitive people, you can play the exact same holes one way that you would play completely differently if you were going with your family. And then one of the things that we've been working on for the past couple of years, we introduced at our venue in Dallas, just outside Dallas in Addison, Texas, called the Challenge Hole. And there, instead of putting into a single hole, you have 20 slots in a single hole. And then you have a 65-inch screen above it, and you can play 6 different games, right? So picture the game Duck Hunt, only you're playing miniature golf. So you're putting the ball up, and it's shooting the ducks off the screen, and you're scoring points. And then, of course, there's ducks that if you hit, you lose points. There's a tug-of-war game. There's a blockout game. So there's 6 different games. And the reason that we developed that was our traditional game is great for date night. It's great for groups of 4, 6. You get 8 people on a single hole, it starts to get a little bit crowded. And so the other is you can drink and play the game, but you really can't eat while playing the traditional game. Whereas with the challenge hole, you can eat, drink, and play all in one place. It's, you basically have that space for a 90-minute increment. It's ideal for, you know, groups all the way up to 12, but ideally, you know, from 4 to 8 is like, you know, it's perfect for that. And then you can actually bring two of those units together and get larger and larger groups. So, yeah, I mean, you know, for us, it's not just introducing something and then saying, okay, well, that's it. That's what we've got. It's how do we continue to innovate and continue to elevate the game experience, the food experience, and the beverage experience.
Yeah. Do you have a staff that they spend all their time trying to develop new games and new holes?
We do. Actually, our largest department in our company is our technology department. So we have an R&D group that designs holes. We have an R&D group. We have a software development group. So we launched the challenge hole with 6 games. I think we probably have another 12 that are being developed in the background. And now that we've launched it, we're getting immediate guest real-time feedback on, you know, what do they like? We're tweaking a few things based on their feedback on the original 6 games. But then we're also asking, what games would you like to see? So yeah, we have a lot of R&D that we do to continue to develop both the game side as well as the restaurant side. And, you know, to your earlier comment when you were talking about, you know, another concept where, you know, it was all about the game and they weren't really focused on the food and beverage, you know, as a standalone restaurant, our typical venues operate about a $9 million restaurant.
Really?
Which is a pretty big food and beverage operation. There aren't that many restaurants that do $9+ million. And our best performing venues actually will do north of $13 million on the food and beverage side alone.
Wow. Really? Yeah. To put that into context, I believe that $13 million alone would put you on the restaurant business top 100 ranking of the largest independent restaurants. And I believe, you know, if you look at some of the, you know, the biggest chains, you know, you think it's somewhere in the, I mean, you got some of your major high end, super high end steak concepts like STK and company, you know, companies like that. And like Cheesecake Factory will do, you know, doing the, you know, 12, 13 million or something like that per store. It's rarefied air, in other words. To put your point.
Yeah, we're pretty, you know, our typical venue will have between 350 and 425,000 visitors a year. And I think when it comes, I think what's underappreciated, you know, generally is really understanding how difficult it is for, you know, our food and beverage people in coming up with the menu, because Mark is a huge believer, and obviously I agree with him, that the people eat and drink with their eyes first, right? They're gonna be inclined to like or not like something based on what that presentation is. And so to be in our kitchen on a Saturday and putting out the dishes that they do with the consistency of presentation, when you have anywhere from 1500 to 2400 people coming through on a Saturday, that is a challenge. And that takes, you know, a lot of prep in what kind of dishes meet our brand expectations, but that we can also put out in the volume that comes through at our peak times.
Mm-hmm. Now with a $9 million restaurant plus a, plus mini tech infused mini golf, you've got to have some pretty hefty real estate needs. Yeah.
Yeah. Our typical, we do. Our typical venue is about 25,000 square feet. Our largest one is Dallas, at 32,000, but right around 25,000 square feet, you know, with 4 9-hole courses, and our kitchens are, you know, in the about 2,500 square foot range. It's a pretty big footprint. And our challenge is really finding the right location. We don't, up to this point, have not done ground up build. So we've done a lot of adaptive reuse, or will be part of a larger new build development. So, you know, like I'll take our first two locations, Atlanta in West Midtown. We were part of a $350 million ground up build that we anchored 25,000 square feet of a 75,000 square feet retail. And they also had office space, residential, and a boutique Marriott hotel brand there. Our first Chicago location was in an outdoor lifestyle mall, and we were part of the adaptive reuse of what was a Lord & Taylor space. And both of those venues, one is an urban location, one is a suburban location, and both of those locations last year did pretty close to 400,000 visitors each.
Wow, is that all?
Yeah, I'd like it to be higher, to be honest.
Is the so like, there's got to be plenty of real estate out there. Like if you're able to do adaptive reuse, I mean, right now, given the state of things, yeah,
there is. But finding the right location and the right deal, because our build is really an upscale build, they're not inexpensive, and so. You know, typically when we go into a market, you know, if I look at Chicago, like we'll map out, okay, how many locations can we build? And then let's look at all of our data that says, where do we want to be? What are the hotspot areas? And then based on that, you know, can we find 25,000 square feet? And then with that developer, can we get the right deal that makes sense for everybody? And without like with Chicago as an example, you know, we did one deal with that developer, which was Brookfield Properties, and they have a lot of properties around the country. It was a pretty big check for them to write to get us there. But then once we were able to demonstrate that we were going to bring the traffic that we did and the demographic that they wanted, which fits for our demographic, I think we now have 5 Brookfield locations. Our latest one that we just opened last week in Louisville, Kentucky, in their Oxmoor location. What we have learned is it's really hard to get the first deal done, but every developer we've worked with has always come back after we've opened and want to do another deal. And that's helped propel our growth. I mean, we opened our 18th location just last week, and you know, our first location in the U.S., we opened kind of in the second half of the pandemic and have really been rolling from there. We've opened 3 locations in the first quarter of 2024. So second Boston location, Philadelphia, and Louisville, Kentucky. And we have more coming as we go through 24. We'll be opening more.
Yeah.
Including Minnesota.
Including Minnesota. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Edina will be fun trying that one out. So you mentioned the issue of, you know, making the right deal. And you know, I am absolutely convinced that a restaurant chain success is built on its real estate strategy. That if you can't, you know, you the worst thing that any restaurant company can do is rush into a deal because it needs to get, you know, because it needs to get something done. Because you're going to end up reaching getting a bad site, or you're going to pay too much, or something along those lines. And to me, I think that if you just look at the difference between McDonald's and Burger King, and I would tell you probably about 90% of the difference between those two chains is the real estate strategy. And so if you just pardon my little real estate rant there, that's a key point to me.
It is absolutely critical. You know, I think that, I mean, we've had opportunities where developers have come to us and essentially, you know, offered virtually a turnkey opportunity, but it wasn't the right location. And so when we originally started, we had 52 data points that we were looking at. Now that we have stuff, we have a lot of venues open and are pouring data in. We continue to refine that. I think we're over 100 now that we look at. And internally, our real estate team focuses on the location first, and then can we get the deal? And we've had plenty of people who have come and said, hey, I've got this great deal for you. And we run all the data and say it's not the right location. And if that's the case, you won't touch it, right? Because you might get a couple $1 million more. But when you're looking at being somewhere for, you know, 20 or 25 years, $2 million, let's just say, if that's what the additional amount that developer is willing to pay you, for us, with the volume that we do in revenue, you'd go through that in, that delta in 12 to 18 months. And then you're left with a site that's in a less than optimal location. And yeah, I agree with you. I think the biggest mistake is not picking the right locations, because that makes that's foundational to the ultimate success.
Exactly. All right. So how many locations do you plan to open this year?
We plan to open 7 in total. So we've already opened 3 locations. We're building a second Chicago location, a second Atlanta location. We'll be opening in Fort Lauderdale area and Edina, which will be one of 2 Minneapolis sites. We'll be opening a second one early in 2025, kind of in the downtown area as well. And then we'll be going to outside of D.C. in Reston, Virginia, and Columbus, Ohio, and Baltimore. So those are the ones kind of in the pipeline right now.
All right. Super. Joe, this was great. Really appreciate you joining me this week on the podcast.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me. Thanks, Jonathan.
And that should do it for this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, which was edited, as always, by Spoons, artwork by Nico Hines. You may find this and other episodes of the podcast on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. And you may subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I'm Jonathan Mays, your host, podcast producer, and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. Thank you for listening.